Hello and welcome back to another episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. My name is Misael Trujillo and this is the podcast where I chat to people worth shouting about, figure out what keeps them motivated, how they market themselves, pick up some good tips we can use and we can learn from. On today's episode, I chat to Anika Pyle. You might know them from bands like Chumped, Katie Ellen, or even Sheena, Anika, and Augusta, but their solo record that they've recently released, Wild River, is incredible. Very beautiful, sad, nostalgic, everything you could have possibly wanted. So definitely make sure you check out the record. Link is in the bio. I honestly had such a great time chatting to Anika and came out feeling really encouraged. We talk about marketing, social media, keeping that passion for your art going, gaining inspiration, all that stuff. And I really, really appreciate their time. And I hope you enjoy the conversation. If you do, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts if that's how you're listening, or just telling a mate. If you really enjoy it, you can buy me a coffee. Link is in the bio. But just sharing it about is the main thing. It helps the podcast out more than you can possibly imagine. So yeah, I hope you are all doing well, and I really, really hope you enjoy this conversation with Anika Pyle. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm good. I'm tired today. I got up really early, like before the sun. I had an appointment early this morning, so I'm like, that was my life for, you know, decades, and now I've I guess have the privilege of being unemployed, you know, so I can get up whenever I want. So yeah, I'm a little bit tired, but it's amazing all the stuff that you can get done before noon if you get up at 6 a.m.
Yeah, I know, right? I went through a stage of like forcing myself to get out of the habit of sleeping in because it's so easy to just get into it, right? And it's hard, like your body just feels shattered when you have to change that up a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the last year has been a weird one. And as you said, it's changed how everything's done. How have you found adapting to that? Is there anything that's helped you cope with it?
I think trying to patch together a routine has kind of been a saving grace for me. And I can't say that I always stick to it. Especially we adopted a puppy, I guess like 8 months ago now, 7 months ago. And so it was like, I had gotten into this really strict routine and then we got a puppy and then I was like, oh shit, my routine is gone. But definitely like, you know, I get up at the same time every day now. And you know, I get up and I write every morning and I try and, yeah, keep myself busy and, you know, block out a certain number of hours a day to do work, and that keeps me kind of anchored. And I really look forward to dinner. I'm like really into cooking a dinner these days. So those things have definitely helped. Yeah. Keep my brain in line.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And it's funny because cooking dinner is something that really helped me with my mental health. And it sounds so weird to say to people, but like getting excited about doing, and like then the process of actually cooking takes my mind away from things. It's a nice thing to do.
It's a meditative activity. They say that you know, a lot of people enter their flow state when they're cooking. So it's like you're on another, like you're in the zone, you know,
That's it. Any favorite recipes that I should know about?
I made, a couple of things I've been really excited about. I started making, we were having pancake sundaes every Sunday for a while, but I just 2 weeks ago started making like one big pancake because there was a recipe for a sheet pan pancake.
Okay.
And so I started making it in a cast iron pan, which then you never have a cold pancake. And it's always really fluffy because it's just like one big pancake. Okay. So that was exciting. And then I have made this mushroom bourguignon recipe. I've only made it once, but I keep like obsessing over it and thinking I'm gonna make it again, but it's kind of time consuming. So I like never give myself enough time, but yeah, both New York Times recipes. So
that's awesome. Time consuming recipes are my fourth. I only like doing things that are time consuming. That's mm-hmm. that's the issue. I get excited about the things that then you look up and it's like leave for 4 days in the fridge. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm waiting to eat tonight. You mentioned that you put aside time for writing in the morning. Do you look at social before you write?
I wish I said no. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I wish that I didn't. My alarm clock is on my phone, so it's almost like I'm possessed. It's like, you know, I hit stop on the alarm and then I'm like, well, what's happened? Of course I need to know what's happened, but nothing has happened. Like, if you look at the news a lot, but yeah, exactly. It's like nothing I need to know before 9 a.m. So I'm trying to break that habit. I should stop looking at social media probably altogether. But
do you think it affects your mindset for when you go to write?
I think so. Yeah. I think even sometimes I have to leave the phone on a completely like off in a completely different part of the house to like not be distracted by it. There's something like I'm looking at it right now. It's staring at me in the eyes. It's like very magnetizing in like a bad way. But I've also, it's like my, you know, it's everybody's lifeline currently because so many of us are not able to connect with the, you know, the full scope of our loved ones. So keeping it close by makes me feel in some ways connected to people. So
completely. And this is, I think this is why it's been so weird. I've always had a love-hate relationship with social because it's so needed for marketing anything within the arts. Mm-hmm. But I get really down by it. It just makes me, and there's some days where I wake up and if certain things have been said, I'm just like, can't get around this for like hours. I'm either angry or depressed or one of the
I know. And it's like, it's tough because I try to see the good in it, but it's by design meant to sell us things. And that, you know, even when I'm trying to do good or I follow accounts that are doing good. And, you know, right now I'm doing an internship that requires me to post on social media. I'm like, can any good come of this? It's by design, you know, against us really. So I don't know. It's dark.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's something that I think is really important to talk about as well, because it is important to know how to market yourself and it is important to be able to deal with it. And I think that I'm constantly on the search for asking people's advice on how to find that balance between using social. Like, is there a magical way of filtering out all the crap? But then it's important to know about the crap as well, because that fuels the activism that's needed.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I try. I've been, I don't know. It's tough. I feel like I say all the time, my best friend back home doesn't have social media and she's a therapist. So she, you know, some therapists use Instagram to market themselves, but she does not. And I get frequently jealous, but I'm like, there's no way as an artist that we could do that. You know, I've thought about doing an experiment where I'm like, I'm going off the grid for a month. Like I'll send you once a week email, you know, sign up for my newsletter and see how that goes. But we'll see. It'll happen.
Maybe. I'd love to see that. That would be, I'd love to know if it works, because I often wonder how much of it is, in our heads. Like Dylan from Spanish Love Songs, said something that stuck with me, which is there's a constant fear of people will forget about us. Like,
yep.
And I wonder if people will, because it didn't happen in the past. Like there was bands that didn't get forgotten about that didn't have access to social media, right?
Yeah. Well, I think of a recent example that is kind of fascinating is Mitski. And I am a big Mitski fan, and Mitski like literally deleted all of their social accounts. And then, you know, it wasn't like I didn't think of Mitski or like I didn't listen to Mitski. Of course, I'm not reading her tweets every 5 seconds. And she just did the soundtrack to a graphic novel that's coming out and released a song. And it was like, everyone was so excited. It's like, we didn't forget about Miski. We were just, I feel like it made it like extra exciting because we hadn't heard from her in a while. But of course it's like, you know, she like did years of groundwork touring in front of people and years of groundwork marketing before that. So she has that luxury where, you know,
this is it. I think it would be lovely to be in that position, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But getting there is a different thing. Saying that, you've not stopped doing music since Chumped, right? You've like, one thing's ended and you've gone on to another.
Yes.
What's kept that passion? What's made you want to not stop once something finishes?
I mean, I think it's like survival. I have to make to survive. I've never stopped writing. I'm figuring it out, as we all are, about, you know, exactly how I want to embody my work and embrace it and share it. And I feel like I'm getting somewhere with that. But yeah, it's just kind of this need to create, and it's how I write to process the world. And the world needs a lot of processing these days and always. It's kind of just kept me going. And, you know, I've been very humbled in the process. And, also the desire to connect, I think. Like, I just love to make stuff with other people. And if I stop making, then I stop connecting in that way. So keeps me going.
A nice answer, and encouraging, because I think that a lot of people relate to that feeling of just, yeah, it's hard to describe sometimes because it's such a integral part of just not wanting to let that go. Have you been at stages in your life where there's been pressure to let that go?
I feel like now more than ever, I've really embraced, it's funny, like the 1 year that I can't go anywhere, I've really embraced my identity as a musician and artist. There have definitely been some push-pull moments where I'm like, I'm giving up on music. I'm poor. I'm sick of being sad. I don't want to, you know, I can't do this anymore, or this can't be my career, you know, and I still don't know if it's my, you know, my career. I've learned to accept a more expansive definition of what that means. But I always think of this time right when I went to college in New York. I'm from Colorado, whole state in the middle of the United States, and went to college in New York City. I was 17. I moved there and I didn't take my guitar. You know, before that I was like a punk and was, you know, playing by myself, opening for like my friends' bands and the barn and in the garage and whatnot. And I was like, you know, I'm leaving this behind. I don't need this anymore. I need to like become that activist and be sophisticated. And for some reason in my mind, I was like, I can't do both. So I left music behind for a little while, and it was a deeply depressing, sad, disconnected year. I just wrote a little, an essay for a project that kind of was thinking about what it was like to come back to music and what was the catalyst for that. And I was a big Strike Anywhere fan. And I went to a Strike Anywhere show in the city and heard this song that I loved as a kid, and it like, I really needed to hear it at that moment. And it was nice to reflect on that and be grateful for like, oh yeah, I do need music. Music is life changing and life saving. And I don't know why I ever thought otherwise. So that was a dark time, but I'm past that. Yeah. I love music again. It's okay. Sometimes I hate doing it because it's hard, but yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Strike Anywhere, because there's been a couple of points in my life where I've kind of like moved away from from music a bit. And the first time that happened was I was homeless for a bit in London, and Strike Anywhere were one of the bands that I'd listened to on repeat because, it just hit me so hard. But it's funny because recently when I stopped playing in the band, I went and traveled Asia for a while, and I couldn't stand listening to alternative music because it made me so sad to not be doing it. And it's a really weird feeling. It's a weird feeling trying to make a conscientious choice to not do something that you want to do at some level.
I feel like the Germans must have a word for that. Like, they have a word for everything. There must be a word for giving up playing music even though you really want to do it, or giving up baking even though you really want to do it, or something. Where did you go in Asia? I'm curious.
We did Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, and Singapore for 9 months.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
It was a great experience. Our stuff is still in a locker in Barcelona because we haven't been able to get it back. We're stuck there because of COVID at the moment.
So. Oh my God, yeah, jeez.
So yeah, fun times. I want to say thank you for Wild River because it is beautiful. I know it's a very honest and very... It's the music that I've heard from you that most sounds like you.
Thank you.
When did you record it? Record it and write it as well?
I recorded it actually just before we went into lockdown. We finished tracking in February of 2020. And writing it was kind of a long process. Some of the material was kind of an immediate response to losing my dad in October of 2019. And then some of the material had been kind of floating around for a year or so, but became suddenly like very relevant to what I was processing and thinking about. And it kind of all like sort of came together because I was playing a show at the library here in Philly, and it was kind of a series of artists merging song and poetry and, you know, leaving that up to interpretation. And so I was really excited to play the show, and it was scheduled for like a month after my dad passed away, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. You know, my whole approach to it sort of changed, and I kind of put, it was like a good necessary moment of like catharsis, of like sort of processing where I was at, being able to, you know, give myself some space to write and think about some of the things that had just happened, and then also look at some existing material in a new light. So I sort of put this set together, and not exactly, but almost a direct interpretation of that set is Wild River, because it felt so meaningful to me. I don't think I've ever worked so hard on a single show. maybe Chump's first show. So I wanted to remember it. And so I went to the studio in February and recorded it just before. Wow, I think about that, how lucky that was timing wise.
I love hearing, and it's interesting hearing that it coincided before the first kind of round of lockdowns and stuff, the actual writing recording, because the last year has been pretty tough, and I can't even imagine trying to write that record during the last year, if that makes any sense. But it's also why I think it's so timely right now, because when you listen to it, you can tell that the writing process was cathartic. And for me, the memories it brings back and listening to it is a really nice experience. So yeah, thank you so much for that release. It means a lot. I would love to know what you draw inspiration from. Do you watch films, read books, art? What is it that inspires you to write?
Well, I was just thinking about how really, like, I do watch movies, I read books, I think anything and everything could inspire me to make something. And I think the key to keeping a creative mind, I think, is cultivating awareness. And so I'm always kind of constantly observing and taking notes. And so I kind of think about my brain as being sort of this like file cabinet. And so sometimes I'll be, you know, listening to a podcast or something and I'll be like, oh, and I pick it up and then I'm, you know, open the file cabinet of like, I don't know, XYZ. And then I put it in there and then somehow it makes its way into something or somehow it informs something else. And so I'm always kind of just like, I'm a big note taker, a big observer, you know? So a lot of the inspiration just comes from everyday life. But I really think it just comes from having a sense of like presence and awareness as to what's happening around me.
That's interesting. Does that translate to being a people watcher?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's kind of sad because like, today I was at the doctor and I was like positioned myself so that I could see the other people, which is a little strange when you're like, you know, in this particular area of the doctor that I was in. And I was like, I don't want to watch people too closely because it's uncomfortable. But yeah, I miss that. I grew up, you know, I lived near, we didn't have a neighbor, you know, sometimes we had one person that lived near us, but I grew up in a house that was on, you know, hundreds of acres and there was no one else. So it was kind of a lonely life. And so I really was fascinated with people and loved the airport as a kid because it was this place that felt like very busy and full of people and kind of a liminal space, like no one's here or there. They're all going somewhere. They have a story. And I love to observe people and kind of make up what I think is their life in my head, or just people are so like today I just got so sad. I was having like a scan done, but I was in the, you know, a radiation section of the hospital. So it's like, you know, a lot of people who I'm making the assumption are getting a cancer diagnosis or, you know, are getting treatment for cancer. And like, I was just observing some people and I just like, just the way that they carried their body and like, I just saw so much pain, or it's just so, there was just so much happening, beneath the surface. And it was just like, it really hit me. Sometimes I just like see someone and maybe it's making unfair assumptions about like their body language, or maybe it's being like overly empathic, but I just want to reach out. You know, I just feel like there's a lot of pain in the world and I wish I could take it away from everyone. Yeah. So
I was going to ask whether you think you're an empath.
My therapist says yes, so I'll believe him.
I think it's a weird thing because I have emotions like that where I things hit me really hard, and sometimes it's weird because it's with people that, and I'm quite awkward at interacting with people as well, which makes it even worse because then I'm like,
you'd never know.
this is my practice, right? This is my practice, but you should see me before podcasts and like, but it makes it difficult because sometimes I want to reach out to people that I don't know that well, but I've seen them post something and I'm like, I hope they're doing okay. Mm. And it really hurts me, but I don't know how to always like approach that. Sometimes I think it would just seem silly to reach out of the blue and be like, are you okay?
Aw, yeah. I think it's, I don't know. If you're well-intentioned and you have no expectations for how someone's going to receive something, I think it's always, it's just nice to say, you know, I see you.
This is it. And I think it's really needed
with
how social media is right now, as we were saying. Like it's very easy to feel like we're part of a community with our point of view. It's very easy to be in line with each other and share each other's content, but not actually be interacting with the people in that community, and everyone feel quite lonely within it.
Yes.
So yeah, checking up on people is really important right now, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
What do you think is the thing you've changed the most about how you approach music from Chump to now?
Well, I think
other than it being punk.
Yeah. Sonically very different. I think a big thing is, I mean, you know, obviously I'm making music that's much less collaborative. You know, this record was so, in some ways it was kind of lonely to make, very different from the established spark of, you know, four people in a room and kind of riffing off of each other. And, you know, I feel like Chumped was very much like a 25-25-20, you know, 100% split. It was like each of us came to the table with something. And, you know, Katie Ellen was kind of like, I wrote a lot of the songs in full, but obviously I didn't write everybody's parts, and we kind of arranged things together in some ways. And now this was kind of like, okay, I'm doing this all on my own. With the exception of Matt Schimmelfenig and Jeff Rosenstock and Kaylee Goldsworthy played strings and saxophone, and Matt really like produced all of the electronic stuff and really helped me like bring the sound together and whatnot. But yeah, it was kind of a lonely process, but a growing process. And I think, you know, Chumped was, our goal in Chumped was to have fun. It was like, this needs to be fun. That's what we want. As soon as it's not fun anymore, we don't do it, which is why Chumped is not a thing anymore. And I think that was a very worthy goal, and I loved that about it. And now the music, my approach to music is, my goal is not to have fun all the time. Like, because the work and the creating is sometimes a very grueling process. It's not always fun. You know, this record was not, there were fun moments, you know, but mostly it wasn't very fun. And so I think that is a big shift, like seeing what role creating music plays in my life beyond, you know, it's not the same as like playing the bar down the street twice a week and eating free pizza. I wish I could do that. I would give anything to be able to do that right now, but that's not what it's about now. It's sort of like it's a process that mirrors my own sort of personal and spiritual growth. So yeah, I guess it's not fun anymore, but that's not true. But you know what I'm saying? It's like
completely.
The goal, the intent is different, I think.
But that's part of making a sustainable career out of it, right? And I think that's why some bands don't work, and why I think your approach to Chumped was so bang on. Do you find that you focus more on the sustainability of it now than you did before?
I think so. I think, you know, I wouldn't be able to have the perspective that I do now if I hadn't have been experienced what I did in Chumped, which was kind of like, there was really no, I wasn't, you know, there was a point where I was like, oh, I want to take this more seriously. Like, I'm going to quit my job and go on tour for 9 weeks, which would not recommend ever doing that. Yeah, it was like, I wasn't really thinking about it in terms of like, it wasn't until after Chumped ended that I was like, this is meaningful to me. I want to be able to do this for a really long time. Even if it's not like my full-time job, even if I don't, you know, make money from it at all, I at least need to make enough money to make the records that I want to make, you know? And kind of when Chumped ended, I was like, I want to make a record every year until I die, which I haven't quite gotten there. I think it'll be more like every 2 years, but
you still release a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you look at like my partner is a huge Willie Nelson fan and a big John Prine fan. And you look at, especially in kind of like the country or like Americana world where these artists have like, I mean, Willie Nelson's like 89, you know, he's fucking old, and he just released this like amazing covers record because he loves Frank Sinatra. The dude has released so many records, and it's like, that's, you know, that's beautiful. And, you know, I think of like Tim Barry and how, you know, Tim will make, he's a friend of ours and he'll make records forever, you know, and that's, I want to, you know, I was in a hype band. It was great, but it was hard, and I don't need hype any longer. I just want to keep doing the thing that I like to do. And I hope that it moves people, but that's sort of a byproduct of the work. So
has there been anyone that's given you advice or encouraged you, or that you have like looked up to in the punk scene, say, that helped you gain that point of view?
I mean definitely Jeff Rosenstock is always someone that I cite when I'm like, you know, he was, before he was a friend, I was a fan of his music and his ethics. Like just someone who, you know, continues to do what the fuck he wants to do, regardless of what label he is or isn't on, regardless of who may or may not listen to his music. And he's definitely someone who, you know, when I'm like, I don't know what to do, he's like, just do it, you know, just keep going. And I recently spoke to him actually, and he said that his, you know, Mike Clark had given him some really good advice, who is another person who, you know, I respect deeply and someone who has sustainability in his career, but remains true to his integrity. And Mike told Jeff that his greatest asset was being prolific, just keep making stuff. And yeah, I think that's, don't get too hung up on if it's good or if it's perfect, or, you know, are people going to like it? Just keep creating it, because the more you put in to it, the better you get. And I think that's, yeah, just really, really sound advice. And, you know, when I'm stuck, I kind of look to Jeff, and I glean a lot of love and information from Trump's publicist, who I guess my publicist, but I would call her more of my friend and kind of a confidant and mentor at this point. But Talia Miller, you know, we got connected with her through Dan Ozzie, who is a writer that wrote early on about Trump's work, and she's kind of been with me all along, and she's given me some really good advice. I remember when Trump was over and I was starting KDL, and I was like, I don't know what the fuck to do. What am I supposed to do? And she's like, do whatever you want. There are no rules. And even if you make one KDL song and then you move on, and you make one Anika Pyle song and you move on, and then you start some other like hardcore band called Shrill and then you move on, it's like each thing is a patch on your quilt. So I really think about all the work that I do as just like a patch on my quilt. And it doesn't have to be a perfect quilt. That's the beauty of a quilt. It's all different and it all comes together somehow. And yeah, I feel like I heard someone recently say that making creative work that's really good, that lasts, is surrounding yourself with really talented people. So I just try and surround myself with people who are much smarter and more talented than me. And then it helps, you know?
Yeah. You've touched on a few things there. I mean, Jeff Rosenstock and Mike Parker, two of my absolute heroes. I look up to them so much. And again, Asian Man Records was something that helped me a lot when I was homeless. Like, and someone, and Mike replied to me when I reached out as I was getting better. And that was something that was like a huge pat on the back. It was like, it felt so good. Incredible people. But you also mentioned how collaborating with people is a huge part of the process. And yet your most recent record was more of a solo endeavor. Is that something that you think you'll continue to balance between, like collaborating with people? And do you think now doing things on your own will be part of what you'll continue to do too?
Yeah, I think I've sort of expanded or diversified what collaboration means, you know, because my experience with it was this is the band and we get together and we do the thing, which I'm not saying that, you know, might not happen if we can ever go in rooms with people again. But like right now, you know, I've learned to think about like, okay, the beauty of being a quote unquote like solo artist is it kind of opens your possibilities for collaboration. So it's been really fun to kind of like dream up ways to collaborate remotely or work on projects. And like right now, Anthony, who is the guitarist of Katie Ellen, and has his own fantastic project called Strange Bride, he and I are swapping like I'm covering his song and he's covering my song.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of a sad concept because he lost his mom a couple of years ago. But it was like this crazy, I was like, let's just swap songs. Like I really want to cover this song of yours. So you cover this song and they're both reference flowers. So, yeah. And it was just like, I never thought about that being a collaboration, but it totally is. And it was really special. And I missed making music with him. I felt kind of disconnected from our friendship. And I mean, I haven't seen him in over a year. It's kind of crazy. And so, yeah, that was like a really special thing that I wouldn't normally think to do if we were, you know, playing together. So I think I see the next thing that I make a little more, like a little more juicy, a little more meat on the bones, you know, like a couple, I think there will be more instrumentation. I don't, you know, maybe different than what I've done in the past, but yeah, the beauty is there are no rules.
Yes, for sure.
No rules, you know, no parents. So,
you know, one of my favorite things about music is seeing things stripped down. And a lot of my favorite musicians are people that do multiple projects and are always doing different things and also quite often do things where it's just them. There's something about seeing people on like stripped down to just them being able to say their emotions. And, you know, I've been in situations where I've written a song and it's super emotional and I've gone into a band room and not either portrayed it the same or changed things around because there's other people around. It's not quite the same all the time.
Yeah. I really like something I'm learning, and I've learned a lot about this from my partner, Roger, who is, I guess he would identify as like a folk singer. But someone who, you know, operates in really the tradition of the song, which I feel like when you're a punk or, I mean, I listened to a lot of other music when I was a kid, like, you know, pop music and jazz music and whatnot. But my, you know, genre of choice was like punk and emo. And so, you know, until I like sort of expanded beyond that. And also I feel like it's very folk genre specific. You're really paying tribute to the song and the arrangement is about the song itself. And so that's why, you know, you have this spirit of like people are always covering the same song. You know, you have these sort of like standards that hundreds and hundreds of artists have played, and the musicians, like a lot of these session musicians in Nashville or whatnot, it's all about the song. It's not about their ego. It's not about the band. It's about serving the material.
Yeah.
And that's been really, you know, as a person who also, you know, like really appreciates, I love songwriting and I love to hear songwriters. I love to hear the song and the primary instrument because I like words more than anything, I think. And so when you work to serve the song, is where I think you really capture what the artist is trying to say. And I've learned a lot about that from observing Roger and kind of the world that he operates in and listening to, you know, all these country artists kind of.
Yeah. It's funny because I've said it a few times. I got drawn to the punk scene because it was one of the types of music I liked where it was an accessible community, where I felt like it was the easiest to belong. I would have loved it if there was a folk community in the UK that I knew of that type of music, but it was people like Kevin Devine and Josh Ritter as well. Things like that I was listening to at the time where it was like a crossover and that expanded my music taste. But there's not been many people in the punk scene that I can talk about those things with because it's not quite, they're like different worlds, even though they kind of like sonically seem to like make sense. They're like, they're telling stories and they're like very,
yeah,
there's a lot of activism in them.
Yes.
Yeah, I often wonder why there's not more folk in punk.
Yeah.
Other than folk
yeah,
punk.
Unless, yeah, I was going to say. Unless you're folk. And then you have, you know.
There's plenty of that. But yeah.
Married the genres. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think about, you know, I grew up listening to, it's funny. I'm like thinking about like, I'm like embarrassed that I can't remember this, but when like, let's say, let's put us in 2003, maybe 2004. The dude from Lagwagon. Okay, there's two bands, Lagwagon and then the other band. I can see the poster on my wall, but they did this tour and it was just the two songwriters from these two punk bands. And I loved hearing it because, you know, I was a kid playing an acoustic guitar. Like, I didn't have a band, you know, so I always loved to kind of like see these things stripped down. Like, you know, I was a Lawrence Arms fan. Yes. So hearing Sundowner, like I loved Sundowner because I was like, oh, I'm familiar with this voice. I love this song writing, but I'm drawn to this music, you know? And like, I grew up, I mean, you know, I loved a lot of like just strictly pop songwriters. And, yeah, I actually like have the most embarrassing moment of all time now looking back at it. And I was like, I'm a fucking idiot. But my best friend loved Bob Dylan and her parents were, they were like Bob Dylan hippies. My parents were like Grateful Dead, The Who,
nice.
You know, my mom loved Led Zeppelin and like ZZ Top. They were like those, like classic rock kind of hippies, not folk hippies. And she used to play Bob Dylan and I was like, I fucking hate this guy's voice. And I should be skewered because now I just have such a, like a massive appreciation and love for Bob Dylan's music and poetry and his activism and his creativity and his fuck you attitude. And I'm embarrassed that, you know, I was like, let's put on Modest Mouse. Fuck Bob Dylan.
They also love Modest Mouse though. What a great band.
Also good, different, you know, probably not as legendary.
Do you think there's a bit of like snobbery towards acoustic stuff in the punk scene? Like, I went to watch, and I know it's not punk, but I went to watch Manchester Orchestra once and Andy played some Right Away Great Captain stuff. And the crowd just started booing. Like, it was like, we do not want to hear you play an acoustic guitar. We came here for... I've struggled with, like, the concept of why people can't appreciate a different thing. It's like... And I think in the UK specifically, it's very much to do with the drinking culture. It's like,
you
go to a gig to drink.
I mean, I have thought about this now that I feel like I chumped probably encountered these kinds of spaces more than I would now. I mean, I can't imagine touring Wild River on a punk bill. Yeah. Can you imagine? Like,
I would personally love it. I think bands it would work with, but yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I would go out with Jeff or, you know, there are people I would go out with, but I cannot imagine that this type of crowd expecting entertainment, you know, expecting fun, like a raucous good time, you know, they don't want to be confronted with their own vulnerability. And I think that the punk scene, certain, you know, facets of the punk scene are very kind of adopt a sort of like toxic bro mentality. And that's unfortunate because, you know, you hope that whenever you're getting up on stage, you're playing to a crowd of receptive people who you've got the mic. So, you know, you're the person kind of controlling the environment and setting the tone. And you'd hope that people would be open to that, but some people have their own agenda and are going to get rowdy and alcohol, you know, brings down your defenses. And I've definitely, like, when Katie Allen first started touring, I had people come up to me and be like, we don't want to hear, you know, men come up to me and say, we don't want to hear about your feelings, like, stop telling us to take care of each other. Like, we're here to have a good time. And I was like, well, you can't have a good time without respecting people. I'm just reminding you of that. So if you're going to be a dick, there's the door. I think people are afraid. I don't know.
It's horrible. I know, absolutely. And I think I was, in all honesty, although I always suffered from anxiety at gigs, like certain times I'd feel very anxious, but I was very naive of what gigs could be like for others, until my partner, who also suffers from anxiety, started going to gigs for me, and I saw how it would affect her, and that made me feel quite uncomfortable.
I think that's the definition of, you know, when people, myself included, with my own privileges, like, creating an awareness around your privilege, because that's, you know, you are afforded the privilege of not having to think about that. You know, like, I walk into a space and I don't have to think about whether or not, you know, inherent, of course, now I make these assessments, but personally, I don't have to walk into a space and wonder if it's safe for Black people because I'm a white person. I don't want to be associated with spaces that aren't safe for Black people. I want to create a, you know, cultivate a space that's comfortable and safe for everybody. But, you know, I can recognize that that's my privilege, that I am afforded because of the way that I was born, you know? So it's, I think, just cultivating, proliferating new ideas and cultivating awareness, which, you know, hopefully when we're all back in spaces, it's all going to be fixed and we've had time to think about everything. That's my deep hope.
No, I know. I hope a lot of change and movement towards change. And I hope venues reopen having a bit more time to have thought about how they do things and how they, yeah. Unfortunately, I also think there's a lot of dicks. So I'm hopeful, yeah. But I think that a lot of work is needed. I want to touch on Sheena, Anika, and Augusta because I love it. Is there any plans for more of that?
We want to. Yeah. Yay. I mean, it's tough because we don't have, we currently don't all have the capability to record remotely. So, and it's not really a recording remotely thing. It's very much like a getting an excuse to get in the room together and like love on each other. So, we talk often about the next thing that we can make. We did a Neil Young cover that we played, you know, we've only done one tour. It was 5 days. And it was really fun and we loved it and we'll do it again someday. But we covered a Neil Young song that we really want to record because cool. It was really fun to learn and play. So that will definitely happen. And then I hope we can record.
Definitely excited for more. And I can't wait for things to get back to some kind of normality and be able to be at gigs and catch you live with the new material as well, even if it's not a punk gig. I last thing I want to touch on, and afterwards I always ask anything that you want to plug, so we'll mention anything for sure. But the acoustic recordings you've been posting on YouTube, I've listened to all of them. I absolutely love them.
Thanks.
What is that? Are you trying to just go out and record when you feel like it? Are you trying to set up some kind of routine?
So all of those are, and eventually we'll tell the story, but all of those acoustic videos are actually from a trip that was taken in March of last year. Roger and I flew to LA to do a tour down to South by Southwest with Charlie Mountain, which is John Allison Weiss's other project. Oh, cool. And of course we flew on March 11th and on the plane the world basically shut down. Wow. So we landed in LA. South by Southwest had already been canceled at that point. We canceled all the other shows and then we were supposed to fly out of Austin, but neither of us wanted to get on a plane. So we rented a car and we drove all the way back to Philadelphia from Los Angeles. But Roger had this great idea of instead of you know, we're here, we might as well play music. And we got a national parks pass so we could kind of make our way avoiding people. And, you know, at that point we knew like basically nothing about the coronavirus. I think back on it, I'm like, oh my God, we went to a grocery store without a mask. What were we thinking? But we didn't know, you know? So we recorded these videos kind of like along the way. And so most of them are from that trip, which was really special. And we just last night looked at, you know, I took some film photography, and Roger had just gotten a new camera. And so we were kind of reminiscing and looking through photos from that trip, and like, what a wild thing. So someday we'll tell the full story, because it was quite the experience. But
that's a really cool story, and something quite wonderful to come out of what ended up being, even if you didn't know at the time, such a messed up situation, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't know there wasn't going to be gigs for this long at that point.
Yeah, I had no idea. And it was just so, honestly, just like so nice to, even though it was very nerve-wracking, I cherish just being outside and being driving, you know, traveling at all, because, you know, as we made our way closer, it was like we got back and then Philly, you know, no one left their house for like a month and a half. And we still barely leave our house, but it's like, I'm really grateful for that trip and the ability to see America one last time.
No, I really enjoyed them, and I've listened to them twice actually, because the first time I watched them through, but the second time I was reading a book and it's very peaceful, and because you've got all the like background noises and stuff as well. Yeah. It's like, it's very nice to relax to. So I will definitely be putting a link so people go watch them, because I really enjoyed them. Thank you for them.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed chatting so much.
Yes. Yeah, we do. I can't believe it's already over.
And yeah, like I said, I'm excited to be able to watch you live. Is there anything you would like to plug? Anything you would like me to link underneath?
Yeah, I always plug my Patreon, because I love it. It's really fun. And I do a live stream there every month.
Awesome.
It's usually on the full moon. I try and time it that way. There's a zine, and I put out a kind of like a positive psychology, like personal reflection thing on the first of every month, and it has like, you know, creative activities to do and a listening recommendation and stuff.
That's cool.
Poems and whatnot, just a bunch of crap, bunch of creative crap over there. So that's patreon.com/AnikaPyle. And I'm really excited for this Bandcamp day coming up, because Anthony and I will be putting out these songs, and I'm really looking forward to it. So
amazing. Well, does the zine have a name?
I just call it Life is a Funny Haha.
That's
so
awesome.
This will be volume 3 in April. And it'll be all poetry, because April is National Poetry Month in the States. So
I meant to, time gets away from me, but I meant to talk about poetry. I released a poetry book, self-published.
Oh, dang.
And I've seen what you were doing, and I'll send you one.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited for you to get the poetry out. Like, very excited. Anika, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for checking out that episode of the podcast. It was such a pleasure chatting to Anika. I really, really hope you enjoyed it and found it encouraging. Please do share it about. Tell your mates. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you think, what you wish I would have asked, what you want me to ask next, who you'd like to see as a guest. All that stuff is really, really encouraging. Helps us keep going. And if you really want to support the podcast, you can buy me a coffee. Definitely check out the links underneath too for all Aniga's wonderful music, as well as the Patreon. Helping artists out right now is vital to their survival, considering the year and a bit that everyone's had. And I know that applies to everyone. But the arts and everyone that works within it, and the bartenders and the people that do sound, all those people have definitely suffered. So if you can help, that would be wonderful. Make sure you check out some of our other episodes. Some I would recommend. My chat with Catherine from Fresh was absolutely awesome. My chat with Jason Lytle from Granddaddy is another real good one. Go check out my chat with Jimmy from Polar Bear Club. Their new band, Shy Tooth, is real good, and you'll dig that if you're into this kind of stuff. But yeah, enjoy, have fun, keep safe. I'll catch you next time.